Ever think about like what happens if you're legally responsible for something really bad like murder, even if you didn't actually do it yourself?
Yeah, we're gonna be talking about that today. Diving deep into this case, People v. Reed, it's super interesting. It really gets into like all the complicated stuff about criminal accountability, especially when it comes to young people, kids who are accused of crimes.
I mean, so in this case, we're talking about Daryl Reed. He was 15 at the time, and he was convicted of armed robbery and murder. But here's the thing that makes this case so interesting. Reed didn't actually shoot the victim, and he didn't take the money.
Okay, so then what happened? Like how did this even
Well, that's what we're going to unpack today.
Huh?
We're going to look at why Reed's statements to the police were so controversial. How the appellate court first overturned his conviction, and then what made the Illinois Supreme Court step in and reinstate it.
Got it.
So we're going to learn a lot about accountability today, I think. Like how it works when multiple people are involved in a crime. And also, we're going to be looking at Miranda rights, especially for juveniles. Like how do courts figure out how much someone was really involved, like their intent, even if they weren't, the main person doing the crime. This case is like a perfect example of how tricky criminal law can be.
It really is.
Okay, so let's start with the basics. What actually happened? What was Reed's role in all this?
So our sources tell us that Reed, who again was 15 at the time, along with his sister Joanne, Joseph Brooks, and Robert Davis, they all got together and started talking about robbing an older man. They called him a pappy.
A pabby.
So Brooks had a .22 caliber gun, and he gave it to Davis.
Okay, so right
That would
away,
from the
we've
beginning.
got a plan forming here, and there's a weapon involved.
Absolutely. And this is where that idea of accountability starts to come in. Even if you're not the one pulling the trigger or even taking the money, if you're part of the plan, the law recognizes that you share some of the responsibility.
Right, because it's not always just one person acting alone.
And the law is designed to discourage anyone from even helping with a crime, not just the person who actually commits it.
That makes sense. So where was Reed during this planning stage? Was he actively involved in these conversations?
Yes, he was. The court found that Reed was present during these talks about robbing this pappy. And then when the group went looking for their victim, Herbert Madison, Reed went with them. They found Mr. Madison. He was 65 years old and followed him into an apartment building. And importantly, the court found that at this point, Reed's intention was to rob Mr. Madison.
Okay, so he was there, he knew what was going on, and he was going along with the plan to rob this man. But he didn't actually take anything from Mr. Madison, did he?
That's right. Once they were inside the building, Davis told Reed to reach into Mr. Madison's pocket. Reed did that, but he didn't actually take anything out, and that's when things escalated really quickly.
Oh, no.
Davis then took Mr. Madison's wallet, and they struggled, and Davis shot him.
Oh, that's terrible. So what did Reed do when the shooting happened?
He ran away. He fled the scene with Davis and Brooks. Later on, Davis and Brooks counted the money they had stolen. But the sources say that Reed didn't get any of the money.
So he was there for the planning, went to the scene, even tried to reach into the victim's pocket, but he didn't take anything. He didn't get any money, but then he ran away. Okay, so now we get to a really important part of the case. His lawyers tried to suppress the statements he made to the police. Why did they do that?
This is crucial. So before the trial even started, Reed's defense attorneys said that anything he told the police and an assistant state's attorney shouldn't be allowed as evidence. They argued that because Reed was only 15, he couldn't really understand his Miranda rights.
Right. Those are the rights everyone hears about on TV,
Yeah,
right?
exactly, from Miranda v. Arizona.
Like the right to remain silent.
And the right to have a lawyer. The defense argued that Reed, being so young, couldn't fully grasp those rights and couldn't knowingly give them up.
Yeah, I mean, 15 is so young to be dealing with something like this.
It really is.
So, what did the first court, the circuit court, decide about those statements?
They heard testimony from psychologists, the police officers who questioned Reed, and even Reed himself. And in the end, the circuit court said no, Reed's statements could be used as evidence in the trial.
Okay, but then this case goes to the appellate court.
Reed's lawyers appealed the circuit court's decision, and the appellate court actually did overturn the conviction. They said Reed should get a new trial.
So they agreed that maybe a 15-year-old couldn't fully understand his Miranda rights.
It seems that way. They must have had some serious concerns about that.
It really makes you think about how young people understand the law.
Yeah.
It's just different than adults, right?
Absolutely. Their brains are still developing. Their judgment isn't fully formed. It's a very sensitive area of the law.
Okay, so for a minute there, it looks like Reed might get a second chance.
Right.
But then the Illinois Supreme Court steps in. What happens next?
Well, the state appealed the appellate court's decision to the Illinois Supreme Court.
Okay.
And this is where it gets really interesting. The Illinois Supreme Court decided to reverse the appellate court's decision and reinstate Reed's original conviction.
So they basically said the circuit court was right all along.
Exactly. They agreed that Reed's statements could be used as evidence and that the conviction should stand.
Wow. Okay. So this all comes down to two really big legal issues.
Yeah.
First, was Reed's Miranda waiver valid? Like, did he really understand what he was giving up when he talked to the police?
Right.
And second, does this accountability theory apply to him, even though he didn't shoot anyone or take the money? So let's start with the Miranda issue. How did the Illinois Supreme Court figure out if Reed really knew what he was doing when he waived his rights?
They use what's called the totality of circumstances test.
Totality of circumstances. What does that even mean?
Well, it means they didn't just look at one thing.
Okay.
They looked at everything surrounding the interrogation.
Okay. So what specific things did they look at in Reed's case?
Well, they considered the fact that Reed was told about his Miranda rights multiple times. The police officers told him. And he also had a written form of the rights that he read.
Okay.
They also pointed out that Reed initially said he understood his rights.
Okay.
Another big factor was that Reed had been arrested before.
Oh, so this wasn't his first time dealing with the police.
Exactly. And importantly, his mother was there for at least part of the questioning.
That's good. At least he had someone there with him.
Right. So even though Reed was young and, you know, he had a lower IQ.
Right.
All these other things made the court think he did understand what was going on.
Okay, so it wasn't just about his age or his IQ. It was about the whole picture.
Exactly. The totality of circumstances.
So they felt like the state had enough evidence to prove he knew what he was doing.
Exactly.
Okay, that makes sense. So now let's talk about this accountability theory. This one seems really important. What does the Illinois law actually say about accountability?
So the Illinois statute, it's 720 ILCS 55-2C. It basically says that someone can be found guilty of a crime even if they didn't personally do it.
Okay.
If they help someone else commit the crime or even just intended to help, they can be held accountable.
So even if you're not the main person, you can still be responsible.
Exactly. That's the idea.
Okay, so how did the court apply this to Reed? I mean, he didn't do the shooting. He didn't take the money.
Right. But they looked at everything he did. They focused on him being there when they talked about robbing the Pappy, following the group to find Mr. Madison, and even trying to block Mr. Madison's way and reaching into his pocket.
But he didn't take anything.
Yeah. No, he didn't. But that action of reaching into the pocket combined with everything else was important to the court.
Okay.
Plus, he ran away with Davis and Brooks after the shooting, and even though he didn't get any money, he had agreed to split the proceeds.
So even though he didn't get a share, that agreement was still important to the court.
Yes, very important. It showed that he was part of the plan, and they also highlighted that he didn't try to stop the robbery or tell anyone about it.
Right. If he had done something to stop it or report it, maybe things would have been different.
It's possible.
Yeah.
The court really emphasized that idea of shared responsibility. They even had a quote that really sums it up.
Oh, was it?
Common design to do an unlawful act. Each person guilty.
Wow. So powerful.
It means that if you're part of a plan to do something illegal, you can be held responsible for what everyone in the group does, even if your role was smaller.
So even though Reed was young and had a lower IQ, that didn't matter as much when it came to accountability.
Right. They were looking at his actions and intentions. It's different from the Miranda analysis, where they were focused on his understanding of his rights.
Okay, that makes sense. So it sounds like Reed's case was kind of unusual, especially when it comes to young people being questioned by the police.
It was. Usually, courts are extremely careful about protecting juveniles' Miranda rights because they know young people can be vulnerable and might not understand their rights completely.
Right. It's a lot of pressure for a young person to handle.
It is. But in Reed's case, the fact that he had been arrested before and that his mother was there with him for part of the questioning, those things made the court less worried.
So those factors made them think he maybe had a better understanding of what was going on.
Right, and this raises another point.
Okay.
The accountability theory has a pretty broad reach. It's not just about being at the scene of a crime. You have to show some intent to help and actually do something to help the crime happen, even if it seems small on its own.
So you can't just be in the wrong place at the wrong time. You have to be actively involved somehow.
Exactly. And it's always the state's job to prove that someone is guilty beyond a reasonable doubt.
So it wasn't Reed's job to prove he was innocent. It was the state's job to prove he was guilty.
Right. They had to prove he knowingly waived his Miranda rights, and they had to prove that he was accountable for the crimes.
Okay, so the burden of proof is always on the state. That's important to remember.
It is.
There was also that moment during the trial where the jury asked the judge a question. What was that about?
Yeah, so during deliberations, the jury asked the judge if they could find Reed guilty of one charge, like the robbery, but not the murder.
Okay.
And the judge told them to keep deliberating based on the instructions they'd already been given.
So no special treatment or anything.
Right. And the Supreme Court later looked at that and said the judge did the right thing.
Okay.
They felt the jury had all the information they needed to make a decision.
Got it. So as we wrap up this deep dive into People v. Reed, what's the big takeaway?
Well, I think the most important things to remember are, first, even if you don't personally commit the crime, you can still be held legally responsible if you helped or intended to help. The accountability theory is really powerful.
Right. It's not just about who did what. It's about who was involved in the plan.
Exactly. And second, when it comes to Miranda rights, especially for young people, courts look at the whole picture.
Not just age or IQ, but everything.
Right. They want to be sure that the person really understood their rights and gave them up voluntarily.
This case really makes you think, you know, Reed was so young. And even though he was involved, he didn't actually hurt anyone or get any money. Does that make a difference when it comes to accountability?
That's a really tough question. It gets at the heart of juvenile justice and how far accountability should go.
Right, like where do we draw the line?
Exactly. If you're interested in learning more about these issues, I'd suggest looking into how Miranda rights for juveniles have changed over time.
That's a great idea.
Or look up other cases that deal with accountability. There's a lot to think about here. It's a really complex area of the law that affects all of us.
I think our listeners will definitely have something to think about after today.
I hope so.
Thanks for breaking it all down. It was a really fascinating discussion.
My pleasure. Always happy to dive into these complex cases.
Until next time.
See you then.